Welcome to the Premier Academy 360 podcast, brought to you by VSP Global. We'll bring you regular topical insights and advice from your peers and subject matter experts. Here's your host, Jim Castor, Vice President of VSP Provider Relations.
Welcome back to the Premier Academy 360 podcast. I'm Jim Castor, and today we will resume with part two of our episode with Stephanie O from H&L Partners and Dr. Marianne Murphy. We left off in our last episode talking about what we can learn from other sectors of the economy about consumer behavior. So let's talk now about some specific examples to help all of us better understand some of the behavior we might be encountering in the future in optometric practices.
So, you know, let's talk about a 30-something parent with three kids and it's time for their annual checkup. Walk us through how that mom or dad might decide when and how to get exams for the family.
Well, he or she is going to decide if it's absolutely necessary. It's going to be, so if the child's complaining of eye pain, or obviously the child can't see things, or whatever the case may be, chances are they'll actually call their pediatrician first and say, is it safe? Should I take them to a doctor? So unless they have already a trusted, established relationship, they're going to call and see, they're going to get permission from the doctor to take their child to another doctor. From there, they're going to obviously be looking for the cues that it's okay. The other thing too is that, when we think about where they are already, they're going to be trying to consolidate trips, as we're already seeing. You know, don't go out more often than you have to. Only essential, right? There's essential and non-essential. You know, Walmart has stepped up in a big way. They are touted as heroes. Their employees are touted as heroes. They're on the front lines. They're risking their lives to stock our shelves. Well, guess what else is in the Walmart? If it's, you know, it used to be about convenience, right? Oh, I'm right here. Here we are. Now it could actually be perceived safety. That, you know what, this is one, I'm not going to make another trip out. We're already here. And so I'm just going to, you know, do it all in one trip. Those are the kinds of things to think about. And, you know, what's the option is to offer the reassurance, thinking about, you know, in with a safety mindset.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Murphy, you're hearing this. How do you see this playing out with this specific example of the 30-something parents?
Yeah, I think as an industry, we're in a unique position because, you know, we don't need to be going out and cold calling these patients, right? So they're either calling our office and asking, but more interestingly, because so many of us have been closed for the last 6 weeks, we can be in a position where we see them on the schedule and we can call them and proactively offer our advice. And so it's the same thing in our office. Because we're going to be seeing less patients in the office, we have more technicians, clinical technicians, and even doctors available to do some chart review. So as we're looking at a particular day and we see a family of three, it's taking the opportunity to go into their medical chart and look at those situations and which patients do really need to be seen. Because I think when it comes to that perceived need, you know, again, that family of three, it may be one child that has had significant prescription changes every 6 months, and one of the children who doesn't even wear glasses. So the needs aren't all the same. And just because you have three children, they're obviously not equal. And so us helping parents understand that and encouraging them to just bring one of the children with them, and so that they don't need to bring the entire family and risk exposure to everybody, but understanding the personalization that can be involved there. And then I think it goes the same with, you know, our patients who are older, though, helping them really understand the true need. Because you may have a patient who has a chronic disease condition like glaucoma that you're monitoring, and it's important that you check them every 6 months, given a particular patient. And it might be someone you've seen every 6 months for the past 3 years and had to make no changes. And the visits seem relatively routine. So that particular patient may be under the impression that their need isn't that great. They'll say, you know, Dr. Murphy, I've been seeing you every 6 months and we don't really do much. You just tell me everything is okay. And that's good. That's what I want to be saying. However, that need is critical because I need to make sure that nothing needs to be done. And I do need to check their pressure and I do need to measure their visual field and I do need to analyze their optic nerve. So helping patients differentiate between, like Stephanie was referring to, kind of essential care and helping to inform their perceived need allows us to be the best providers and the best educators in the situation.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting you're bringing up kind of a proactive approach to how to reach out to patients and help them sort through what's essential versus what isn't. I would, as a consumer, think that that would come across in a very positive way. Stephanie, what are your thoughts about that? You heard this example. Would you appreciate a call from your optometrist saying, we've reviewed your chart and here's what we think you should do?
Absolutely. And especially when you look at some of these segments, you know, I'm not in the mom with young kids and I'm not in the over 55 yet, but those are two segments that really are looking for experts to help them. You know, the mom and the dad are in protector mode. The older set is obviously in, you know, operating out of a scary place right now. That older set is being told by every expert, no non-essential medical visits. Not even follow-up visits. At least that's what they're being told right now. We'll see, you know, moving to the future. They're sitting there thinking, no follow-up exams, no non-essential. Okay, I'm good. I don't have a choice. There's nothing I can do. And then your eye doctor calls you and says, this is essential. This is critical. Oh my gosh, thank you for letting me know. I'm sitting here thinking it's just a follow-up exam. I need your expertise to tell me and then reassure me. You're a medical doctor. You're telling me to come to your office, that it obviously is important and I'm going to follow that advice. Most people of that age group would follow the advice of the doctor. I think it is going to be a very important. 43% of Americans say that, and this is a big jump from previously, that they want to hear from the brands they trust. They are hungry to get your insights and your perspective. And especially if you've done what Dr. Murphy says, this isn't just like a blasted email, hey, we're open on Saturdays. What she's talking about is almost concierge level service, where you've gone into someone's file, you've gone into their history, and you've basically done an assessment of whether or not what they need is essential or non-essential for them, because they may not be equipped to do it themselves. That's very, very compelling.
Okay, great. Thank you. This is a related question, but a little bit broader. Within every situation, there's an opportunity, a threat of an opportunity when there's a crisis or a negative event. And I'd like your thoughts, both of you, on what opportunities do you see for practices right now to build relationships with patients during this pandemic? Stephanie?
Well, the one that we just talked about, which is reaching out with patient-specific, you know, information, you know, specific to them. But you don't have to, you know, you can say, Stephanie, I've got 5,000 patients. How am I supposed to go into every file? There are other things that you can do. Right now, consumers are operating at the most lowest level of Maslow's hierarchy. You know, we haven't seen this in like decades, where the lowest level of Maslow's hierarchy is, am I physically safe, right? That's the need that they're assessing and that they're treating as a consumer. So what that means is that you definitely want to be a safe place and you have to dispel the fear. So for example, the stories right now coming from us about COVID-19 are very, very scary. How do you normalize being at your practice? Do you have, for example, a YouTube channel? Can you show patients talking about coming back? Normalize it. When consumers function at the bottom level of Maslow's hierarchy, they fall into a herd mentality, right? Safety in numbers. I'm going to do what everyone else is doing. Everyone else is staying home. I'm going to stay home. Oh, everyone else is going out. Maybe I can go out. So if you can highlight your practice, highlight, whether it's email, video, tweets, whatever, welcoming patients back and then showing that they're actually there, so that it's like, oh, okay, well, obviously that's a safe place. Look at all those patients who, okay, well, I guess we're doing that now. I guess we're going back to the eye doctor now. So try to normalize it, you know, try to address the fear. Yes, definitely with the facts and what you're doing, but also the optimism, you know, and the safety that you offer in your practice.
Dr. Murphy, from your perspective, what do you see as the opportunities for building relationships with your patients right now?
Yeah, I would say a lot of the same things that Stephanie said. I think it's important for us now to re-engage and really build upon those relationships that have taken years to form. It's been an interesting opportunity as well to interact and engage with new patients. They're looking for, you know, the highest level of care, the highest standard of care, the highest standard of cleanliness. And, you know, there are different avenues in the industry where that is perceived. And so to really capitalize on that if we can, making sure that we're good about communicating with patients what we're doing, what we're doing to stay on top of the information about how coronavirus is spread. And I think that happens while the office is closed as well as when we re-engage. And so, you know, it's telling them that wearing contact lenses is safe. It's telling them that if they've chosen to wear glasses, we're here for them if they need to get a new pair because they're working in an environment where they feel safer in glasses. It's really having been available. I think patients that we've spoken to during this time have struggled when they've called offices who are their preferred providers and found that no one's answering the phone and no one has returned their voicemail for 24 hours. Like they've truly gone dark. And I think that's a tough message to come back from as a patient, kind of like when I needed you most, you weren't there. So I think the opportunity is, especially if we're social distancing, I know a lot of offices are running two different teams, kind of a morning team and an afternoon team. And that's designed to both social distance the staff as well as spread out the patients. So if all of a sudden now you have someone who's answering phones from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., those patients who are really looking for their provider to be available when they need them is an opportunity that is tough to pass on. So anything that we can do to be available for folks just to simply answer questions goes a long way. And with that comes the access to technology. So, you know, this may not be the ideal time to jump into telemedicine if you haven't done it before, but you know what? Patients need it. And patients want it, and patients want an opportunity to interact with you over video without having to come in. You may not have been an office that used a kiosk or some form of internet, you know, information collection device where you can get their chief complaint without sitting directly across from them. It's not an easy time to get into it, but it's probably the right time. And so if patients can see that you're making those type of investments to make their experience in your office more contactless, like Stephanie was talking about, and a little bit more seamless, then I think they'll appreciate that as well.
Stephanie, let's talk about that for a minute. I want to talk a little in more in depth about telemedicine. Talk a little bit about what you're seeing in other verticals within healthcare related to telemedicine and how that might be shaping consumer opinions about optometric care using telemedicine platforms.
Yeah, so telemedicine is here to stay and it's here to grow. We've seen overnight huge numbers of adoption, partially because the system has allowed it to happen. So for example, in mental health, up until 6 weeks ago, you had to have 100 hours of training. You had to have the right platform. You know, overnight, any mental health professional is allowed to practice telemedicine. So the access has been granted. And what we're learning is that people are loving it. You know, you say, well, Stephanie, how many people have actually done it? The numbers are quite big. 1 out of 5 people has experienced telemedicine. Those are primarily in the age group 25 to 34, but it is growing with all segments. And we know that I think a 40%, yeah, more than 40% said that they are wanting to try telemedicine. So 1 out of 5 have done it. Another 40% want to do it. What's the impact of that? Well, people kind of expect it to be on all the time. So how do you manage for that? Do you still get to keep, you know, regular office hours or not? 2, people think that maybe you shouldn't pay as much for it. So consumers think that a telemedicine visit should actually be cheaper than an in-office visit. Some do worry. 40% are concerned about the ability to get proper treatment or a diagnosis in a virtual setting. So how do you give the confidence that you are able to do some treatments that way? How do you vindicate your value? You know, so if consumers are saying, why am I paying as much for a telemedicine as I would, you know, so how do you make sure that the value is still there? I think that actually once consumers get used to it and they realize that the visit is actually quite similar, You know, they're going to say things like, but you didn't have any overhead. You didn't have any staff. You didn't. Yes. Yes, we did. So, so that I think will probably, you know, work itself out. But for sure, it's here to stay. I mean, what, you know, the CEO of Teladoc, Teladoc is the number one telemedicine platform. In his quarterly earnings, said that they've reached a new tipping point in telemedicine, and that the future of healthcare is virtual care, and we are never turning back. People expect the ability to have virtual care for routine visits. So that's what you're looking at. How can we turn a routine visit into a telemedicine visit?
Yeah, thank you. So Dr. Murphy, hearing all of that, talk a little bit about how you're leveraging telemedicine in your practice in this current environment.
Sure, we're using it, much as Stephanie said. I mean, definitely choosing a platform for us that will stand the test of time. While there have been some changes in the regulations around the training, and there have been some changes in the regulation around the HIPAA compliance for certain platforms, we opted to go with a platform that we knew we would be able to continue using after the pandemic, after, you know, people kind of settle back in. We didn't want to have to relearn another platform later. So I think choosing something that will stand the test of time goes a long way. There's a lot of information available both through Premier 360 Academy and, you know, state associations about how to appropriately code and bill. I think we all understand that in our particular industry, because we have so many instruments that we use, and, you know, there's so much information that we get from the patient subjectively when they're in the office about how they see things or what things look like, and the magnification that we use, that it becomes really difficult in some platforms to use telemedicine. That still may be the majority. There's still a large percent of patients, though, that can be managed over telemedicine. And that may be a chronic red eye patient, an allergy patient. And if nothing else, I think it leads to something that Stephanie mentioned earlier regarding kind of transparency and giving patients that comfort. For a lot of us, it's established patients who will say that I've got a red bump on my eye. Well, they can't describe where it is. You know, we'll say, is it on the cornea? Is it on the conjunctiva? Is it on the lid? And they're like, I don't even know what those words are. So if it's getting over video to look at it and have them come up close to the camera, we can make those distinctions. I don't need to be able to read their pressure to do that. There are great platforms out there for being able to check someone's vision. And I think as long as you document appropriately, Affinity EHR has a great platform for documenting telehealth encounters, and just being honest about what you're able to do, what you're able to see, and informing the patient that you're doing what you can to provide the highest level of care in the environment that you're in. The level of comfort that you establish with the patient and the confidence that they have in you goes through the roof, really. And again, what I've found is it works for, you know, children. Obviously, their parents are readily available. They've got cameras on every devices. It can be done on a phone. But even our elderly patients, our geriatric patients are ready to go. They've been using this in a lot of other healthcare verticals without any issues at all. So I think it's been a great way for us to stay connected to our patients.
Great. Thank you. Well, that went by quick. Actually, some great insights from both of you. I want to go ahead and wrap things up. So thank you so much to both of you for joining us today and for all of your insights. We're developing content focused on the journey to reopening for doctors, and we're providing tangible resources and tools to support you through that process. I hope that this podcast is one step in that direction for all of you with some new ideas to think about. And we hope to see you next time on the Premier Academy 360 podcast. I'm Jim Castor. Stay safe, everybody.
This has been the Premier Academy 360 podcast, brought to you by VSP Global. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to check out podcasts.vspproviderhub.com. for a comprehensive collection of business building training and education tailored to VSP network doctors and staff. This premier program benefit is currently available to all network practices. Visit podcasts.vspproviderhub.com to learn more.